Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The scandal around Rupert Murdoch's News Corp has grown very rapidly to stunning scale. Today, Murdoch himself and his son James testifying before a committee of the British Parliament. What started as an investigation of Murdoch newspapers hacking into British phones has blown into a scandal of news ethics, police corruption, and a compromised political system. There is speculation it could bring down a government. What about Murdoch's empire? This hour on Point, Rupert Murdoch under siege and the future of News Corp. You can join the conversation. What do you make of the substance of this scandal, the hacking, the payoffs, the cozy political links? Do you expect consequences in this country at News Corp holdings like Fox News, The Wall Street Journal? Will Murdoch's empire survive? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. James and Rupert Murdoch testifying today before a parliamentary committee. The chair of that committee, John Whittingdale, started right in, grilling James Murdoch. You'll hear his question, then James Murdoch, who's been running much of the company, and then at James Murdoch's side, the elder Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch, breaking in. You'll hear just at the end, quite plaintively and interestingly, nothing's not strategic, but here it is, just from the top of their testimony today.
You made a statement on the 7th of July in which you stated that the paper had made statements to Parliament without being in full possession of facts, and that was wrong. You essentially admitted that Parliament had been misled in what we had been told. Can you tell us to what extent were we misled and when you became aware of that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And first of all, I would like to say as well just how sorry I am and how sorry we are to particularly the victims of illegal voicemail interceptions and to their families. It's a matter of great regret of mine, my father's, and everyone at News Corporation. And these are standards. These actions do not live up to the standards that our company aspires to everywhere around the world. And it is our determination to both put things right, make sure these things don't happen again, and to be the company that I know we have always aspired to be. As for my comments, Mr. Chairman, and my statement, which I believe was around the closure of the News of the World newspaper.
Before you get to that, I would just like to say one sentence.
Right.
This is the most humble day of my life.
One sentence from Rupert Murdoch at the top of his testimony today there next to his son before a committee of the British Parliament. I would just like to say this is the most humble day of my life. From the global media tycoon, we're looking today at Rupert Murdoch's News Corp and its future in the midst of this scandal. Joining me first from New York is Dean Starkman. He runs the audit blog for the Columbia Journalism Review, where he's been closely following the twists and turns of the News Corp story. He's also a former reporter for the now News Corp-owned Wall Street Journal. Dean Starkman, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Tom.
What do you see at stake in this scandal, maybe in these hearings today?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, you had a company that was this global powerhouse that seemed untouchable both in the United States and certainly in the United Kingdom. Even a week ago, I would have thought that this is a scandal that so far that could be contained to the United Kingdom, and it's was somebody referred to it as a British scandal, and I, in fact, someone in News Corp referred to it as a British scandal, and that seemed plausible. But you know, every day that passes, the stakes get higher and the temperature gets hotter, and it's anyone's guess at this point. Literally, it's not unthinkable that. That the Murdoch reign could actually end at News Corp, which I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying the fact that it's even possible is stunning.
It is stunning. We're going to look at the scandal and its many facets and at Murdoch's holdings around the world, including in this country. But could you just describe for us, Dean, the management of this country and how deeply embedded there Rupert Murdoch is, the sort of the history of that, where it stands now, James Murdoch, the roles of the different family members. They are right at the top of this very, very powerful media empire. Explain how.
Well, the reason they're at the top is that Rupert Murdoch built this company with his bare hands. His story, whatever one thinks of him, and I've been mm-hmm. as much of a critic as anyone. His story is one of the most remarkable business stories of the 20th century. He started with modest newspaper holdings inherited from his father in Australia and steadily built a global empire with I think almost anyone should concede is incredible creativity. The move I thought was most brilliant was buying a string of independent TV stations in the United States and creating a fourth network. Remember back in the 80s?
Fox News Network.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought? So, Rupert Murdoch, the family owns, I think, 12% of News Corp. They have a complicated share structure, but they own 12%. But
they only should say a controlling interest, I believe.
Yeah, and Sarah may correct
not a majority.
Me on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but certainly he has through special voting shares. He owns controlling interests. So the Murdoch family. This is the Murdoch family's company. Really, it's Rupert Murdoch's company.
And remind us, he's 80 years old now, but he's still been very much in charge.
Oh yeah, and he's apparently in robust health and strong as a horse. Apparently, he's not looking as sharp as possible today, but as he usually does today. But I don't think anyone should doubt that here's a guy who's fully in control.
And for the first time, maybe in his life, you heard him there saying, "This is the most humble day in my life." The prospect that, against his will, it's conceivable in the midst of all this, he could lose that control.
Yeah, it's conceivable. I think it's fair that your listeners should take that statement of contrition with a grain of salt. It was only a week ago that Rupert Murdoch was telling his. The paper that he now owns, unfortunately, the Wall Street Journal, where I used to work, the company had done very well during this crisis and only had made minor mistakes. Today, it's within a few days they had hired that interview was widely seen as a disaster. And within a couple of days, they had hired a very slick and I think very effective public relations firm. I hate to give them a plug, but it's Edelman. And the company has done a complete about face and all these apologies have been flowing since then.
Major contrition right at the top before the British Parliament Committee today. Dean Starkman, please stand by. There with us now also from New York is Sarah Ellison, contributing editor at Vanity Fair, where her big piece on the News Corp phone hacking scandal, The Dark Arts, ran in June. Her book, War at the Wall Street Journal, Inside the Struggle to Control an American Business Empire, out in paperback. She spent 10 years as a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, left in early 2008. Sarah Ellison, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
What is it exactly about what's been revealed in the UK that has been so damaging to News International, the face of News Corp there? I mean, we know phone hacking in the case of a young girl who's murdered, but what's going on with the British mentality toward this very powerful news organization in the UK?
Well, I think that there in the UK what's happening is something equivalent to what we've been watching happen in the Middle East. There's a certain version of the UK's Arab Spring happening.
Wow.
In the UK. So people feel like the connections, I mean, when you ask what has News International been doing wrong or what's actually the problem there, in addition to phone hacking, what we've learned about all of this is that there are so many connections between the people who work at News International and News Corp, the police at Scotland Yard, and the Prime Minister of the country and politicians in the UK are all so intertwined and interconnected. And the people in Britain feel like no one has been telling them the truth. Everyone has been watching their backs, afraid that Murdoch's newspapers are going to blackmail them. They're sort of playing both sides of the fence. It's just something that is garnered a general sense of unease and paranoia in that country. And I think that is, to Dean's point, that has really punctured the myth of Murdoch's power there and here. And what you see now is a sort of feeding frenzy where people are who all of a sudden, who have had a very long built up resentment about Murdoch are really finding now their voice and able to really attack him in a way that they haven't been in the past.
Scotland Yard and law enforcement deeply implicated here as well. Paul Stevenson, the outgoing, he's just resigned, London's outgoing police chief, saying today that 10 of 45 press officers for the force, former employees of Rupert Murdoch's News International. Dean Starkman, there's no law against that, but the influence both in law enforcement and in British politics, Britons have known for a long time, but revealed as just kind of over the moon in these recent string of revelations.
Right. Well, Tom, it's all in the details. What we've learned in the last couple of weeks has been the raw power that the Murdoch empire holds in the United Kingdom. This scandal, as everyone probably knows at this point, has been brewing since 2005 or even before. But Clive Goodman, a reporter, News of the World, was arrested, and what happened was they seized the records of a private investigator named Glenn Mulcair that had 11,000 pages of evidence. This is back in 2007. The Metropolitan Police swore up and down that they had pursued this investigation. Then in 2009, the Guardian newspaper, which has led the way on this, it's been actually quite heroic, published another expose, prompting all sorts of folks at the Metropolitan Police again to attest that they had looked into it and it was only a single person. So what you see there is a glimpse of the sheer power of News Corp to really their grip on a major Metropolitan Police Department. It's actually stunning.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about the phone hacking, police corruption scandal in Britain, and the future of Rupert Murdoch's News Corp empire, including Fox News and The Wall Street Journal, and much more right here in the United States. Dean Starkman is with us today. He runs the Audit business media blog for the Columbia Journalism Review, former reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Sarah Ellison is with us, also former reporter at The Journal. Her big Vanity Fair article on the phone hacking scandal, The Dark Arts, in the June issue there. Her book, War at The Wall Street Journal. Spent 10 years there. The Murdochs, father and son, Rupert and James, before the British Parliament today. John Gapper of the Financial Times joins us in just a moment. But first, let's listen back to the sound of this scandal unfolding across the pond. July 11th, Britain's Prime Minister, David Cameron, promised that the News Corp scandal would be thoroughly investigated.
I mean, let's just stand back and look at the big picture of what we're hearing. Look at the big picture of what we hear today about royal protection officers who could have given information about the people they were working for. A former prime minister potentially having details of his bank accounts hacked. These things we are hearing are absolutely appalling. And what people need to know is that I'm determined we will get to the bottom of this.
Look at the big picture, says the British Prime Minister. This has gone straight to the top. Here's former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown speaking 2 days later about the hacking scandal, speaking here before the British Parliament.
Many, many wholly innocent men, women and children who at the darkest hour, at the most vulnerable moment in their lives, with no one and nowhere to turn, found their properly private lives, their private losses, their private sorrows treated as the public property of News International, their private innermost feelings and their private tears bought and sold by News International for commercial gain.
For commercial gain, the former Prime Minister Rupert Murdoch at one point seeming to kind of fluff it off, then not. On July 16th, meeting with reporters, after a meeting with the family of murdered 13-year-old Millie Dowler, Dowler's phone was hacked by News Corp's News of the World newspaper. Here's Murdoch then.
The founder of the company, I was appalled to find out what had happened.
I've cried and I've apologized. And here's Rupert Murdoch today before the committee of the British Parliament this morning.
I would just like to say one sentence. This is the most humble day of my life.
The most humble day of my life. And it is a life that has built a most grand media empire right around the country. Australia, UK, United States, China, and on and on. Sarah Ellison, Dean Starkman, stand by. John Gapper joins us now from New York, associate editor, chief business commentator for the Financial Times. He's been writing about the News Corp scandal and issues. John Gapper, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Does News Corp survive this scandal? In what form? With what kind of leadership?
I think the question is going to be the leadership. News Corp is going to survive. It's a very large company, and the division where all this has been occurring is really very small.
You're talking News International in the UK?
I'm talking about News International in the UK. It's probably 1% of the revenues. So even if the whole thing was sold, it wouldn't make much difference to News Corp at a financial level. However, the incident has clearly raised lots of questions about the way that News Corp is run, the leadership of Rupert Murdoch, the involvement of his children, including James, Elizabeth and Lachlan, in running the business, the independence of the company's directors, and the general oversight of conduct within the company. So there's a myriad of questions here.
They've lost $7 billion or so in market capitalization in the matter of days. Does this leap the pond? $7 billion in market cap loss is a big deal, even globally. You say it's in one division, but does it touch the rest of the media empire, Rupert Murdoch?
I think there's two questions here. One is whether or not the actual conduct that we've seen in the UK, the phone hacking, the illegality, is found in the US. So far, there hasn't been evidence of that. There's been no evidence, for example, that this sort of conduct happens at Fox News or at the Wall Street Journal. That seems pretty unlikely, actually. But there's another question, really, which is that it goes to the heart of how the company is run, that Rupert Murdoch has controlled it for 60 years through his voting control of the company. And his whims and his wishes have been what has driven the company. And now that's been drawn into question. And I think the $7 billion loss in market cap, which of course shares can go up as well as down, we'll see how that works out. But it goes to the corporate governance.
Sarah Ellison, how do you see it? Does the scandal jump the Atlantic? Does it come to the United States? The dark arts you write about here. John Gapper doesn't anticipate that we're going to have news of Fox or the Wall Street Journal tapping Americans' phones. Does that insulate them and Murdoch's operations in this country from the super scandal in the UK?
Well, I think that John's point is good, except for I think one, it already has come here to a degree. Certainly in other media outlets, there are small bits of this. I'm not talking specifically about phone hacking, but you have CBS News paying for Casey Anthony's interview and being very unapologetic about it, which is something that a news outlet in the past would not, in the United States, would not have really admitted to so proudly.
Now, they're clearly not owned by Murdoch.
No, no. What I'm saying is that we should not sit in the United States and feel so sure that this is not happening here. I think Roger Ailes and Fox News have such a reputation of paranoia and keeping tabs on people. I think that we don't know about this, and I don't want to spread paranoia, but I've been astonished at every stage in reporting on this that I've always been surprised by the extents to which various reporters have gone to get stories. And this was not just at News of the World that this was happening. This was happening all over the UK. The reason we're focusing on Murdoch is because there's been such a cover-up of this at News of the World and at News Corp. I think that I was at the Wall Street Journal for 10 years, never heard of hacking into a phone. I don't think anyone's doing that there, but I do think that there is an influence here, and you can point at Murdoch or you can point at sort of the broader trend that he seems to lead, that we are not so immune from this kind of thing. TMZ was just, not just, but they were paying hospital workers for private information about patients. And I think people are hacking. There's phone hacking. There's also email phishing and all these kinds of things that are part of our media culture now. And I don't think we can dismiss that.
Dean Starkman, you know, people in the Murdoch world are talking about sort of an orgy of schadenfreude now, of competitors of Murdoch taking glee in his troubles right now. Certainly, people are getting out the knives. Joe Nocera in the New York Times, a major competitor of News Corp since News Corp bought the Wall Street Journal. He writes today in talking about the tables turned on Murdoch. And, his column sounds like sort of the Declaration of Independence indictment against King George. He says, they've been a force for not been a force for good over the course of his long career. He says his Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, Fox News has done a great deal to coarsen the political discourse. His tabloids have lowered the standard of journalism on three continents and routinely broken the law on at least one of them. He's dumbed down his prestige papers like the Times of London. He's run roughshod over cross-ownership rules meant to prevent one man or company from having too much power, then used his lobbying might to get those rules diluted. He's put kowtowing to China ahead of freedom of the press. I mean, you hear the Declaration of Independence kind of
it's funny,
but then not funny.
Right.
Does that change? Any of that change?
Well, I mean, if you go down that list, and it was a good strong column by Joe, that we'd have to talk about which of those things is wrong. If News Corp is coming under opprobrium and people are denouncing it, they really have to look in the mirror. I mean, all of this is well earned and richly deserved. My main beef, and I think a lot of journalists' main beef is that this is a company that sneers really at public service journalism, and it's very ethic. Is that sort of everybody is in on the game and everyone has an angle, and that the Fox News motto, fair and balanced, is this kind of snide attack really on the very ideals of American journalism, which is that there can be such thing as fairness and objectivity and people kind of going in with clean hands and doing the best they can to sort out a complicated situation. News Corp, frankly, holds those values in contempt and thinks anyone who believes them is a sucker. And I think that's not, I think that's one of the reasons that at least in journalism circles, people are not sorry to see News Corp come under the microscope.
Rupert Murdoch here again under the microscope before a committee of the British Parliament today. Here's Rupert Murdoch in his testimony making the point that News of the World, where the phone hacking emerged first, represented only a small segment of this very large global corporation, told parliamentarians he was unable to devote his full attention to investigating reports of misdeeds there.
If I can just say something. And this is not is an excuse, maybe it's an explanation of my laxity. The News of the World is less than 1% of our company. I employ 53,000 people around the world who are proud and great and ethical and distinguished people, professionals in their life. And perhaps I'm spread watching and appointing people whom I trust to run those divisions.
Rupert Murdoch banging the table there before the committee in London. His staffers proud and great and ethical and distinguished. John in Albany, New York. John, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm very interested at the coverage you're providing. I couldn't agree more with the gentleman, the things that he said. The whole Murdoch organization, they sneer at anything regarding the public good or rational public discourse. All they are, they're in it for money and power. And they've been able to disguise this for a long, long time. Now, finally, they're being exposed.
John, a lot of American media moguls were in it for money and power. Rupert Murdoch wouldn't be the first. It's not a crime to be in it for money and power, is it?
Well, the aspect of crime is for law enforcement. What they do is clearly not in the public interest of people who have worked for centuries, or at least two centuries, for this country to improve the benefits of democracy for the well-being of people. They sneer at this.
John,
that's what he's about.
They sneer at democracy. We've got it. I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Narragansett, Rhode Island. Paul's calling. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yes, I think this is much ado about very little. If, you know, the government needs to be investigated here, not a news organization. I don't understand why Rupert Murdoch is getting on his hands and knees, number one. I mean, I'd rather have a newspaper hacking my phone than a government. And the fact of the matter is, the government in the United States of America has made it clear they're hacking. They're willing to look into people's private lives. The Internal Revenue Service is a criminal agency, and we're going after news organizations in England. Please, give me a break. Freedom of the press is freedom of the press. If anybody did anything illegal, they should be prosecuted as individuals. Leave the news organizations alone. This is all about snuffing out freedom of the press. So the criminals that are in our governments across the pond and here in the United States of America can continue to kill people, torture people, do whatever they have to do for the bottom line, for their cronies and their friends.
Paul, we've got it. Dean Starkman, what do you say to these two perspectives? You know, one, Murdoch smears democracy, then Paul, you know, let him go, let him run. It's freedom of the press above all.
Yeah, well, it's easy. I agree with the first caller. I disagree with the second. It's not about freedom of the press in the slightest. This is something the Wall Street Journal's editorial page tried to pull yesterday and to widespread derision. Phone hacking is illegal. It's a crime. It's been going on for at least 6 years that we know of in the UK. It's done on an industrial scale at an important unit of the News International News Corp empire. I understand that News of the World was 1% of their total revenue. Mm-hmm. That News International was 3%. Don't believe this. I think John will back me up on this. That the newspapers there, their political importance far transcends their financial one, and that they were a major mechanism of News Corp's power in the United Kingdom. We're looking at illegal activity that's on an institutional level that was countenanced at the very highest reaches of the executive suite of a major publicly traded company. No wonder we're investigating.
John Gapper, I think many Americans' eyebrows are being raised these days, not knowing the British media scene as well as you would, and certainly as Britons by any means. But this notion that somehow, whether right or left, both conservative, Tory and labor leaders kind of in the pocket somehow or kowtowing to Murdoch power. Is it an accurate portrayal?
Yes, it is. I think Rupert Murdoch has owned newspapers in Australia and the UK for two reasons. One, he likes newspapers. He enjoys it. He's an old journalist himself. But second, more importantly, they're a vehicle for political power, for connections. He is heavily influential on politics, on which prime minister gets elected in the UK, much more so than in the US, much more directly, whatever one thinks about Fox News. And there's been a bargain between politicians in both the UK and in Australia of getting Rupert Murdoch on their side. And I think that's what we're really seeing blowing up at the moment.
And Sarah, what about to Paul's? He says, you know, Rupert Murdoch shouldn't be on his hands and knees now. He asks, why is he? What about the contrition? What do you think's at stake for Murdoch, Sarah?
Well, I think that the contrition is possibly partly theatrical at this point. I mean, there was really very little contrition for a long time. I think that he's now facing the rumors that he might step aside and become the chairman of the company and let Chase Carey, his chief operating officer, take over as COO. That was previously an unthinkable rumor even to be out. I think that the question of press freedom is one that is something of a red herring here because, of course, it was The Guardian that initially exposed this, and so we wanted not have too much press regulation over this kind of thing, because otherwise we wouldn't know about this story.
Yeah. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this about the phone hacking, police corruption scandal in Britain in the future. of Rupert Murdoch's News Corp empire, including Fox News and The Wall Street Journal and more in this country. Rupert Murdoch and his son James and more testifying before a committee of the British Parliament today. Dean Starkman of the Columbia Journalism Review joins us from New York, former Wall Street Journal reporter. Sarah Ellison, also 10 years at the Wall Street Journal, author of War at the Wall Street Journal, joins us from New York. And John Gapper, chief business commentator for the Financial Times, is here as well. In an interview on July 7th, James Murdoch, son of Rupert Murdoch and a top News Corp executive, explained how the decision was made, had been made then, to shut down the News of the World newspaper.
We felt that under the circumstances, and given the work, the thorough work, and the process that we've undertaken over the last year and a half, to come to this point, and that realization was something that was inescapable. And we took the decision to close down the paper, to cease publication after this Sunday, really because of that.
And the scandal has deepened and spread since then. Yesterday, news, an early whistleblower in this case, Sean Hoare, who'd been at the News of the World, found dead. Whistleblower found dead. At the parliamentary hearing today, Rupert Murdoch was asked this pointed question by an MP on the committee.
Mr. Murdoch, do you accept that ultimately you are responsible for this whole fiasco?
No.
You're not responsible. Who is responsible?
The people that I trusted to run it, and then maybe the people they trusted.
Are you responsible? No. Roy in Somerset, Kentucky. Thanks for calling, Roy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I don't see how this is actually shocking to anybody. I think that over the course of this, this is going to end up hitting home in the United States, especially with Fox News. It doesn't come to any surprise to me that they were hacking it into people's phones, emails. It's the type of journalism that they provide. And
but nobody's saying Fox News has done that, Roy. You're saying not surprising in the U.K.?
Yeah, I'm not surprised in the U.K. And I think when it's thoroughly investigated that the news agencies that Murdoch owns in the United States, we're going to see Pandora's box open on this. And it's going to become larger than what it is just in London or in England alone. I think it's going to be much larger.
Well, I don't. I mean, they've got criminal charges and allegations going on there. Not yet here, though. There is an FBI investigation of whether or not there was phone hacking after the 9/11 attacks. Roy, thanks for that call. One more, Iowa City, Iowa. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First, I'd just like to say how sorry I am that Rupert Murdoch is having a humble day today. My question is, when you talk about spreading across the pond, it's my understanding that all of his independent TV stations have to reapply for their license to the FCC and part of the FCC.
You mean just as a regular course of doing business? Yeah.
Yeah. And that they have to be found in good character. And I was wondering, I think the public has asked for comments, and if he's, say, challenged whatsoever, there might be a chance or a potential anyway that he would lose a lot of the stations around America.
Well, that's interesting. Let us pick it up, Rick, and thanks for your call. I mean, his stations all over the place, Atlanta, Austin, Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, Houston, right on down. Response online here. Ashwin says his karma ran over his dogma. William says he does nothing different from CBS, NBC, ABC, New York Times. Almost every major news organization will do anything to get a good story. Sarah Ellison, what about it? If and when his American holdings, let's say broadcast holdings, come up for license review and this issue of character comes up, I don't know, does it? And, you know, could what we're seeing in the UK now get reflected in those hearings and holdings in this country, Sarah?
I doubt that he's going to be denied the ability to continue to own his television stations in this country. I mean, we have to make some sort of a distinction between a criminal investigation into criminal activity and to Murdoch's overall reputation. Certainly his reputation is taking a huge hit because of this, but there people do need to keep clear heads about this. You can't just go tearing Rupert Murdoch's business away from him just because you think he's a bad person. I think that there's clearly been a puncture in the bubble around Murdoch's infallibility, and that's definitely coming into play. I think that the company overall is not it's clearly not going to be able to grow the way that it had been before. They just gave up this huge deal for BSkyB that was going to be the largest in their history because of phone hacking. I think that this does diminish Rupert Murdoch. It diminishes the company. I don't think he's going to lose his television stations in this country.
John Gaffer, never mind any government agency tearing anything away. I mean, Jeff Jarvis is writing at his blog Buzz Machine saying, you know, it could be bye-bye Murdoch's, as unthinkable as that was just a couple of weeks ago, now quite conceivable, he writes. And then you'd see professional management come in here, he writes. I mean, this is a huge corporation after all. And he's forecasting that they would quickly conclude that the news division of News Corp is a kind of costly drag, that they would try and divest themselves from that. He says News Corp is essentially now really an entertainment company with movies and all the rest. He writes, professional management will focus on that and get rid of Rupert's bully pulpits. Can you imagine? Can you picture that, John Gaffer?
It certainly would have seemed unimaginable a couple of weeks ago, but more or less anything is imaginable now. I think we've got to realize that the Murdochs still control News Corporation. They have a controlling voting stake in it of just under 40%.
Mm-hmm.
So that any moves that are made will have to be with the Murdochs' approval. There's no question of the board or anybody else being able to get rid of them. Having said that, there clearly is going to be a lot of pressure now for a more professional approach to management, a less familial and inbred one. We could see Chase Carey, now the chief operating officer, stepping up to become chief executive. And I think it's generally true that those professional managers will look at the businesses more on a money-making basis than on a sentimental basis. And although, for example, Fox News is a big moneymaker, mm-hmm. the newspapers generally tend to be pretty small.
Let's say, Dean Starkman, that should happen. And who knows here? Rupert Murdoch is very skilled and very wily, and nobody knows the end of this story sitting here today. But there's a lot of talk about Chase Carey not in the family becoming CEO. He would run it instead of Rupert or instead of James Murdoch or another Murdoch. If they should go that way, you know, focus on the entertainment holdings, walk away from the controversy of the news holdings. Well, first, can you imagine that, Dean? And who would pick up those holdings? Who would pick up the Wall Street Journal? Who would pick up Fox News?
Yes, at this point, yes, the answer is yes. I can imagine it. And the possible buyers for the Dow Jones, the owner of the Wall Street Journal, could be, unfortunately, could be private equity, but perhaps other media companies like Bloomberg, the closely held company owned by the mayor here, or Thomson Reuters over in the UK, another powerhouse. I think what people need to think when thinking about the divesting of news properties from News Corp, I don't think you can stress enough. I think it's a different company. I understand that, you know, financially, it, you know, overwhelmingly it's a movie company, it's a cable company, it's a satellite TV company and all that. But I think that what's missing from that picture, just looking at the balance sheet, is the raw power that the news gathering arms bring to the picture, the sheer political clout that Murdoch and News Corp are able to gain, not just in the UK but also in Washington. One could say yes, News Corp could go merrily along with its entertainment assets. I don't think the company works the same way. I think it's more of a, you know, it becomes, John is probably better on this than me, but I see it as more of as a cash machine, a big utility running more or less like a normal company.
Mm-hmm.
But without its journalism assets, I don't think it's the same company.
But without Rupert Murdoch at the top, maybe it wouldn't want to be. I mean, just to stick with the breakup scenario, because so much seems possibly on the table now. Jarvis says, you know, in the U.S., if the conservatives or right-wing depends on Fox News, he writes, it is surely getting nervous about its fate. It's becoming, if one can imagine this, you know, it's getting... this is rubbing off on everybody. Can you imagine, Dean, as Jarvis does, Roger Ailes assembling, I don't know, a bunch of rich Republicans to engineer a leveraged buyout of Fox to sort of keep it on its political spot?
Oh, that's an interesting and an unfortunate scenario. But yeah, I suppose anything is possible at this point. It's it could, because
And that might be effective because Fox News, unlike the newspaper group in England and unlike Dow Jones over here, Fox News is immensely profitable. It could do just fine on its own. But I think detached from news, the News Corp machine, the sort of the overall, the global reach of that company, it would be severely diminished. It would be much more one more sort of barking dog on the landscape and not this booming voice emanating from this this very powerful organization.
Sarah Ellison, is News Corp without the bully pulpits that Rupert Murdoch has cared so much about, the New York Post or right on around the world, take that away? Is it still the same company? Can you picture that? Can you imagine it?
Well, I think it's definitely not the same company. What we're talking about now is something that people thought would never happen while Rupert Murdoch was alive, because Rupert Murdoch was always synonymous with News Corporation, and there was never a huge strategic reason to own newspapers and Fox News and the entertainment holdings and satellite. This conglomerate was a conglomerate because he wanted it to be that way. And I think that what people are, it's interesting being at the Wall Street Journal, for a long time people were worried about Rupert Murdoch buying the newspaper, and now they're worried about Rupert Murdoch dying because they think that James will sell the newspapers because he's not nearly as attached to the newspaper business as his father. I think that we do have to remember that the 38% voting interest that the Murdochs have in this company. I don't think that the breakup scenario is right around the corner, but it's clearly a different company now simply because it's been diminished to this point where Rupert Murdoch's power, the whole image of this machine is really being punctured and broken down.
The Buccaneer touch, people call it, but yet he is a very savvy guy and loves the crisis. Jason in Omaha, Nebraska, maybe not this crisis, but in general, has flourished in moments of crisis in the long storied history of his building, the News Corp. Jason in Omaha, you're on the air, Jason.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just want to make the point that I feel that people are jumping to way too many conclusions before any investigation has been thoroughly underway.
Though there is quite a lot on the table already in the UK, Jason.
Yeah.
I
mean, but with regards to this, is not necessarily the Murdoch scandal. It's his bit. He has a huge media empire, but there's no evidence that he is directly involved or had any direct knowledge at whatsoever into it. You know, you can watch news shows like MSNBC. I watched last night. There was mm-hmm. a show that not only convicted basically Murdoch, but Rudy Giuliani being somehow involved in it, and Bernie Kerik, before there's any evidence as to, you know, so people already are accusing Fox News of being involved in this. And I'm just saying people should step back and just let a fair investigation come out. And if he's involved, then people can jump down, you know, his throat and try to, you know, ruin the man. But people need to, before they start smearing someone's name, wait to hear the facts and to actually see if he is actually involved.
We got it, Jason. Don't assume too much. And yet there are the Murdochs, both of them, with their deep apologies. They're apologizing for something there, maybe quite a lot in the UK, but point taken. One more, Elaine in Atlanta, Georgia. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Your last caller, I don't think any of this is jumping to conclusions. This was presented to us. We didn't go looking for it, even though I think a great many of us thought that there was far too much power there. I'm not an avid, but a frequent reader of the Wall Street Journal, and I saw the change. When I heard that he was going to buy it, I thought, oh no, here we go. And of course, it took some time, but it did happen. It has changed. And the second caller, I would advise him to view the negative power of the press in the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
It's sort of over-the-top press coverage. There's a long history of it. Elaine, I appreciate your call. Sarah Ellison, what about the Wall Street Journal? Have you seen influence of the Murdoch takeover there? There's been a lot of comment and no small criticism of its stories just during this scandal, sort of
not being vigorous enough in going after what's going on in the UK, maybe appearing as an apologist in its news pages sometimes, not to mention editorial. What about the Journal under Rupert Murdoch's ownership?
Well, I think, of course, the paper has changed dramatically under his ownership in some ways that are not political. He has moved the coverage far more to politics and general news and away from the sort of core business muckraking coverage that the Journal used to do. In terms of this crisis and the way that the Journal has handled itself in this crisis, I think that gets to the heart of one of the questions that people have about why the Murdochs are now in front of Parliament and why people are so so eager to hear what he has to say at this point, what both Rupert and James have to say, which is that they have been resisting any kind of true investigation into this issue. There has been, in fact, a cover-up for 2 years of this whole practice at the company, and they pretty much admit that now. The Journal hasn't been able to cover this at all until very recently, and it's become now there's such a velocity to the story. I mean, I was there briefly when Murdoch had owned the paper, and I was responsible for covering the actual acquisition by Rupert Murdoch of the Wall Street Journal, something that we covered very extensively. The coverage of oneself is always difficult, but the fact that the Journal, the Wall Street Journal, which is the premier business publication in this country, has not been able to look into this at all, speaks to how much they have fallen short in their first real test under Rupert Murdoch.
And here's Rupert Murdoch once more today before the British Parliament.
I would just like to say one sentence. This is the most humble day of my life.
Dean Starkman with the Columbia Journalism Review, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Sarah Ellison, author of War at the Wall Street Journal. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And John Gapper at the Financial Times, thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Gapper.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.